Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series.
We've actually started. I'll cut that out.
What was that about the masturbation?
We are recording now.
Be a different podcast about a different book, I think.
Hey, gentlemen, ladies, stop. We've actually started, the listeners are listening to this. I'm not going to edit it. Well, listeners, welcome. That was a nice outtake there, and I will leave it there. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series. This is episode 29, and I'm here with Stephen and Ali again from last week. And if you want to know more about us all, go back and listen to last week's episode if you haven't done so already. To put it in context, we're in Chiang Mai, about an hour's flight north of Bangkok in the Shambles Studios. And I'm wondering how to start this off, and I think one way, Stephen, maybe, is with your academic skills. How about a sort of a three-minute elevator pitch review of what we got through last week?
Okay. All right, Chris, thanks. As you say, we're here with Ali Taylor. Ali Taylor is a 55-year-old woman, British, living in Chiang Mai with her partner Tuk, a Thai lady who we're going to talk about later in this podcast. And Ali's got a fascinating story, and in that first podcast was setting the scene, really painting the picture of where Ali has come from, the experiences that created her, in particular a relationship with her mother and father, and various loves and sexual experiences along the way, and some heart-rending moments of loss in as part of that life journey. So that was the first podcast, and we've touched on many, many things, including gender, obviously, sexuality, gayness, bisexuality, and just the sheer freedom that comes from what we've said here, and all of us have agreed, breaking the mold. So we're now going to go on to...
Hang on a second. How did he do with his summary, Ali?
I'm fascinated. I want to meet this person.
He's pretty good at doing all that sort
true.
Of stuff, isn't he?
So we're now going to go on to this second podcast. And here, what I'm hoping we can do is elicit from Ali some of the experiences, anecdotes and perspectives on her becoming who she is, and that's meant going from a man, male, legally, in every respect, and moving to a woman. So, Ali.
Okay. When Teresa died, my wife that I'd been with for 18 years, I reached 44, I think we established earlier. I reached this point in life where many people say, "Oh, midlife crisis." You know, they've gone off their head, and people were saying to me around me, saying, "You know, you need to find yourself." And for around about 6 months after she died, I lived alone on a daily basis, thinking, "Where am I going?" And the longer it went on, the more I realized was that I needed to continue from where I had got to. And that was this private life sharing of who I really was underneath, who the exterior that I was conforming to. So I went to my GP, and I said, "I'm having a conflict, and I don't know what to do about it, and I'm wondering as to whether you could recommend a psychiatrist that would talk to me." As I'd already said, I didn't have friends. I certainly didn't want to blow this one on family and find my mother, who was in a home at the time for 2 years, final stages of senile dementia, and one of my sisters that was very Victorian, and the other, who at the time lived quite a bit away from me, and I wasn't too sure as to whether it was on her plate. So I'd gone to the GP and I said, help me. I went to a psychiatrist who was absolutely start raving bonkers.
Sorry, the psychiatrist was bonkers.
Yes. And I sat in a room with this man who asked me questions and said to me various things about my history of my life, and he recommended that I go to see a specialist in London at the psychiatric hospital in London. I was hearing words from this first psychiatrist about being transsexual. Now, I had a life of hiding my femininity within me. And here I was being told of this word that sums up a group of people who I'd never met before. And I wasn't stupid. I heard the word and I thought, well, these are people who are not men. And I was learning very, very fast that what I was actually being termed as was something that was in a book, in people's discussion, able to identify. And I'm thinking, well, I didn't know. That's something that I was learning about me, because I just thought I was hiding my femininity below the surface and conforming on the surface. So I, at that stage, went through a series of sessions with psychiatrists to say, yes, you are, yes, you are, yes,
you are.
How
long did that go on for?
They start with an initial assessment, if you like, saying, we want to say to you that you are transsexual, and this is the path that you can travel in order to fulfil the full transsexual model, and we would like you to become publicly known as this new person who you should follow, and after that period we will assess you and allow you to then, if successful, continue to be where you want to go.
I'm not sure whether if I was in your situation, are they being supportive to you, or are they just trying to pigeonhole you?
I think it's 50-50, to be quite honest, Chris, because there are certain discussions you have. You don't always see the same person. There are certain discussions you have with them. They're saying to you, you know, what do you think? How do you feel? You know, what would happen? What did you do? What did you say? And you're talking to these people, having asked the same questions, and you're thinking, this guy's coming from a different direction. He's actually trying to, you know, split me from this type or that type and this understanding. And I'm thinking, okay, fine, answer them. And after a while, you get confidence enough to actually have an open discussion with these people, and you say, hang on a minute, why are you asking me this? Why are you putting me through this?
But you start to challenge them.
Yeah.
It's good for you.
Because you're actually getting to the stage of frustration. Where is this taking me? Now, because you get on this journey, you then start to research and do all the background of, I've been told I'm a transsexual. There must be another one out there somewhere. Who else? What does it mean? What happened to them? How did they feel? What are they doing?
And you couldn't just Google it then, could you?
You can.
You could then.
Yeah. And what you're finding is that there's this whole raft of stuff that's total nonsense to you, but you've got to piece it together. And I started to find that I could identify with experiences of, fear of if this were to be public knowledge, how they would, you know, how they would react. I'd already understood from somebody in my work environment that they knew somebody who knew somebody. And I was quickly introduced to that person. Oh, they've been there. You ought to go and see them. And there was this gathering of knowledge, of a total new environment of what happens now.
This is all part of what I'm starting to sense is the first stage is this psychiatric assessment, which you've legally got to go through in the UK. They've identified you apparently as a transsexual, which actually is a mistake. You weren't actually a transsexual at that point.
Yep.
So you were at one point, but you weren't then. You were actually transgendered.
Stephen, for the listener's point, can you define these terms again? Well, I know we've done it before.
Yeah, but sure. At that point, Ali was still Alan. Alan was presenting himself as a female more openly in a more confident way, and at that point Alan is performing a femininity. It's performing a gender femininity. The moment at which Alan then physically and legally becomes female, that's then transsexual. But I'm curious as to this notion of successful. What were the psychiatrists, how were they going to assess what had been the successful bit in all this?
Hoops that you jump through. Yeah. On the one hand, as a transsexual person, you are driven by, funnily enough, conformity to achieve.
Yeah.
A result.
Yeah.
So you're conforming to. I mean, these breasts, for instance, are here because I lived in the UK, and if I had lived in Thailand, I would not have these breasts. Okay.
Oh, because the norm is.
Because in the UK, if I needed to conform in order to satisfy, I would need to. This word that is so easy to say but hard to live with, the word pass. Now, if a transsexual passes, they actually are on a road that is so much clearer than the road, easier than the road that for those others they cannot travel. And therefore, if they manage to pass, and I define the word pass as being somebody who saw this person, didn't think too many times this was actually a woman.
So I understand that. I was going to ask what you meant by that. I understand
this
that.
This is the ability to present an authentic feminine performance.
Sure.
That's what it is.
Sure.
That's the past moment, sure. Isn't it? And the breasts are part of that physicality.
Exactly.
That physical performance.
In a Western environment, yeah. It is.
But
to answer your question...
Yeah.
So needing to achieve that, the psychiatrists expect you, or the National Health in the UK, expect you to conform for a given period in a female role in order to then be considered for hormones, in order for you to then take the second step of then be considered, and only considered, for surgery. So you need to conform in the first instance as, yes, you're serious about this because you've actually come out in public. Yes, you're serious about this because you've sustained this period until you've not gone away and hidden and cut your throat and hung yourself. You've then become more looking as a female because you've tried harder to satisfy. And then you conform by taking the hormones and, believe it or not, being able to take the hormones without some bad activities going on, like you reject them, as in you reject your body actually cannot cope with them, your mentality cannot cope with them. So having sustained all of this, you then are at a stage with the psychiatrists of saying, OK, we're now at stage X, we now reconsider... Whether you can. Now, at the time, there was... At the time of me going...
Sorry, whether you can...
Go on to the hormone.
So, therefore, having entered into this cycle, I was a year waiting for hormones. So, therefore, I was living as a female at work without hormones for 1 year.
Dressing as a woman.
Yep.
Changing you hadn't name. Taken any hormones at this point?
Nope.
Never in your life?
Nope.
But psychiatrists are not giving the hormones, are they? It's the GPs. So the GPs have got to go to the psychiatrist for approval to give the hormones.
Yep.
Right.
So having got to the stage of taking a hormone, you then become a sponge for so much more emotion, so much more... change within your mind. All of this change, really, you think you've changed in the previous period. Whoa, no,
really.
When you then get onto the hormone, you change as a person, thinking so much.
What's this? Is a weekly shot?
For the benefit tablets. Of the listener, what's the hormone?
The hormone was stop taking. It will come to me in a minute.
Okay, no problem.
Let me write down. Forgive me. I've not. I'm now. Where are we now? 7 years here. I'm 5 years out of taking hormones. They're bad for you. Don't take them. And it's the same as a contraceptive
pill. Hang
on a minute.
Let's just go back.
Yeah,
there.
It's the same as a contraceptive pill, but stronger.
You're saying don't take them.
Don't take them.
So you're saying if some young person is going to go through this similar experience, you're saying don't take the hormones.
Yep.
Because, you know, Thailand, you can, if I'm a 15-year-old who wants to become Katoi, I can go and take the whole, I can go to the chemist and buy
But
them.
Why am I taking them? It's because of that.
You have to jump through those hoops to get to your...
No, because of this.
The breasts.
The breasts are the hormonal activity. The softness of skin is the hormonal activity. And the hair. The change in hair. As in the
reduction.
So what about the
hair
growth? What about
body?
So why are we asking? Why are psychiatrists? If this is physical, why are the psychiatrists involved?
You tell me. Because it's to actually get them on the right rail to make sure they're strong enough, in order that they can, when they give them a chop and tuck, that they have been conforming all of this time, and are serious about it.
So when
and Stephen, you said yourself that the GPs won't do anything without the psychiatrist's blessing.
Correct.
Right?
But then these hormones, it's about breast enlargement, it's about hair.
Yeah.
It's about, do you stop shaving?
You have to, as a male, and depending on which part of the world you come from and what your genes are like and as to how old you are when you start doing all of this, with a stubble... On a daily basis, at 5 o'clock, you would need to have. At the age of 40, with a stubble at 5 o'clock, you're looking at least 5 years, maybe more, of serious depilatory hair depilation treatment to actually remove the roots of those hairs, and that's on top of the hormones. So the hormones don't stop it, because the hairs have got this pattern; they're growing. And the hair removal, and bless her, Erica, in England, she's in Surrey in Cobham, and she's the best hair removal person you could ever wish to have. I would go there twice a week, and I went for five years.
So wow. you
I'm so ignorant about this area. Do they actually pull out the
her use is of a tool like this, and it's
pencil.
It's a needle, and the needle goes into the pore, and there's a machine here, and there are two effects. One is galvanic, which is the chemistry reaction, and the other is. Sorry, I'm years behind this now, whereby there is a small explosion at the root and it kills the root.
Oh.
And
okay.
That is time and time and time and time and time again, and then, of course, you pluck the hair out and you're lovely and smooth.
Sorry, I know Stephen wants to get onto
this. I want to come back onto this stage, because we've got the psychiatry assessment. You've passed. Passed has meant you've been given permission to have the hormones, which GPs have been given permission to give you the hormones. Yep. You're then on the hormones for a few years.
And you still go back for reassessment at the hospital, at the psychiatric hospital.
But these hormones are not changing your personality.
Oh, yeah, they do. They confirm that what you thought in the first place was right. And I've witnessed people who have been on hormones that actually are destroyed by it. They're totally baffled and confused and haven't got a clue where they are. Why am I on this path? The hormones are actually
mixing me up. Well, that was the purpose of psychiatrists, presumably, to avoid that.
Yeah, but when the hormones get into the body, mm-hmm. the hormones don't just make you, you know, smell things differently mm-hmm. and feel things differently and hear things differently. Mm-hmm. They make you feel so different about how and who you are. And when you are then taking these hormones, which are tablets, and you take them on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and you receive them from your GP, the effect of that hormone is similar in some ways to the hormonal cycle that natural-born women experience on a monthly basis.
So at that point, did you start to feel you were a woman?
I was able to identify at last, I felt.
But why do you say don't take the hormones?
Yes.
Because the hormones will fuck you up. The hormones mess you up so much that you are unable to identify the natural. I was as female as I would ever be before I took the hormones. But the sensations and the feelings you receive, you feel, actually put you into an area of not confusion, if you're able to deal with confusion, but of susceptibility. You are. It's like being naked out there mentally.
I was going to say that there's a thinness.
Yeah.
Become the skin, the thin, psychologically, emotionally, that's heightened. This is interesting because what you're suggesting, though, what you're making very clear, not suggesting, is that the hormones are unnecessary.
Certainly not.
You don't need them.
You don't. And to come up on Chris's point about the Khoi in Thailand, I think they are so privileged because they have the skin they do, they don't have the hair. They have the looks they do, they look less masculine than a broad-shouldered, square-jawed farang. Mm. But they have hormones available at Tesco's over the counter.
Yeah.
And very cheaply.
And they don't have to have a prescription.
Exactly.
They can walk in.
Exactly.
The 14-year-olds, and 14-year-olds are doing that here.
Yeah,
they're going and picking up the hormones from Tesco, as you say.
Yeah. Now, before I had operations on my body, I've had three operations on my body: my nose, my breasts, and the nip and tuck. Now, before I had my breasts implanted, I had breasts developing with hormones. And they were breasts all on their own, and they were lovely little pert things. But for the scale of my body, I'm, for the listeners, I'm 5'8", and I'm about 75 kilos, 80 kilos on average. And the size of my breasts with hormones were not enough to actually allow me to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you're then feeling, well, why is it that I'm having a conversation as a female with a man who's looking at something that's not actually there?
So we've gone through, you're in this hormone stage. You're taking hormones, which you only stopped taking a few years ago.
Yep.
The next stage is to ratchet up this process of legalizing.
Yep, that happens during that period first before you go to hormones. Before you go to hormones, you've actually got to commit yourself. And you commit yourself by changing your name by Depol. And you then, in the UK anyway, have the ability with to go to your company and ask for them to adopt you as this person.
And BAA were happy to do that.
They bit my hand off.
British Airport
Authorities.
They
wanted a certificate in there.
Well done, British Airport Authorities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you said bit their hand up, you mean they accepted it openly, there was no hassle?
They wanted it. They wanted me to help them write the policy for the HR department.
There's some enlightened management.
Totally. And therefore, and not surprisingly, another...
Human resource managers listen to this, take a note.
And not surprisingly, another transsexual came out during that period, and a third... troubled case came out during that period too. So I'm not saying I led the way, but this was the environment that was then easing of, and they've now since employed transsexuals too. Openly.
You're sounding like one of the old pioneers from the West here.
So when do we move on to the genital reassignment?
Okay, so you've taken the test number one to prove that you've changed your name. You then start taking hormones, and then you're able to be more conformative because of what's happening to your body. Your breasts are developing. And at that stage, you then are on this waiting list, which is being at the beginning of my treatment therapy, starting with the psychiatrist, I was told 5 years. When I actually reached the period of five, I was then being told that it would be another five.
How old were you then?
44, 5, 49. And I couldn't do it.
So you, let's clarify this.
You mean you couldn't do it because their decision was?
Let me just clarify this. Sorry. You've 5 years, from 44 to 45, you've gone through this process. You were told at the beginning it would take 5 years, and you were expecting after 5 years of this process, you would get permission to have the full genital reassignment.
Within the UK, within the National Health Service.
On the NHS, the National Health Service, therefore it would be free.
Yeah.
You would be able to have it done. Yeah. They said at the end of that period, sorry, there's a waiting list, it'll take another 5 years, which would have then taken you up to 54.
Yep.
You then decided what?
Because I'd now become, because you need to go on a monthly basis to psychiatric monthly meetings things, you need to become involved with other people to prove, A, to the psychiatrist how you interact. They want to see you in a social thing, they want to see you in a, they want to see how you perform. And you're getting to meet people who are in a similar boat to you. And equally, you're getting approaches from people who know somebody who knows somebody. And I widen my sphere of contacts. And I met people who had come back from Thailand. And they had come back after having surgery, spending a simple amount of money, were satisfied with what they'd received in Thailand. And what's more is they'd fell in love with Thailand as well, because when they got to Thailand, all the stresses and strains that they'd experienced in the UK were also taken away.
Mm.
So I immediately was able to say, well, hang on a minute. I've got so much bloody money in the bank I don't know what to do with. How can I progress it? I'm conforming because I'm being asked to conform. I'm going along this track because I've been told to follow this track. I wish I'd done it 5 years ago. So having wasted 5 years of my life, I jumped on the bandwagon straight away and said, OK, 3 months' time, please book me in. Please, you know, make these arrangements. And on the internet, there's plenty of people who you can sign up with and do. But I went to somebody who was recommended to me because other people had been there and I'd seen what they had done.
Is this in Bangkok?
No, Chonburi.
So for the listeners, genital reassignment is what?
For me, it was taking my penis and inverting it and putting it inside and giving me a false vagina the size of about 8 inches, 9 inches when operated. It's removing the testicles and it's forming labia, lips, and a hood that make it to a drunken Irishman at the train station think that you may well be a female when they look there. It's a piece of art. It is absolutely incredible how this surgery is done. And to all intents and purposes, it is to give you the look of a female and the function of a female to receive a cock. So. Okay. Okay. That's basically,
and it works at that basis. It can be, you can be penetrated vaginally.
Yeah.
Is that a one-off operation? Is it a one operation? It's all done in one.
Oh, indeed.
Right.
You can come to Thailand and book into a hotel next door to the clinic, and they will do it on the 2 days after they've made initial tests and. They're satisfied with the paperwork from the UK. Once again, psychiatric report.
They've got to be. They've got to see the paperwork from the UK, have they?
Yep.
So before, even in Thailand,
yep.
we're recognising there's a degree of flexibility.
I'm speaking for this clinic. I'm not speaking for all clinics.
Okay.
And I am aware that some have not.
Okay.
Because some, you know, I mean, you are sat there thinking, if I paid you the money, you'd do anything.
Yeah, sure.
So, but there are these ethics about these places that are recognisable. They do wait for the paperwork.
So you come to Thailand.
It is.
You come to Thailand. This is all pre-booked.
Yep.
You go in ostensibly as a male. You come out physically.
No. Don't forget, I've lived for 5 years as a female.
You're coming out, but you're going in with a penis.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So just stick with me on the penis bit.
Yep.
You go in with a penis. Penis out, vagina in.
Yep.
You're coming out physically as a female.
Yep.
What about the passport?
Oh, that is so easy to sort out. Because let me get my timings right, before or after, because you're able to refer to the psychiatrist with a letter, you can actually go to, with your depot and the letter from the psychiatrist, you can go to national security number, your driving license, your passport and your date and your birth certificate, and you can apply to have them all changed.
Wow.
Yep, and I did.
So you've come out
already on your passport when you came here, right?
Yep.
So when you came here to have the genital reassignment, you already were legally.
That question, I'm trying to get struggling in my mind as to whether it was before or after that I came into the country with it or without it.
Okay.
And I tend to think it was with it because there were so many hoo-has about it at the time.
Were here in Thailand?
No, with in the press about an American or a German or whatever happening. And I think it was with a passport showing I was. But I question that in my mind. I don't think excuse me, Chris, it's a long time. I think it was without, because when I went back, I was where I was at the time. Yeah. So I came to Thailand on a male passport, correct.
Okay. So let me just clarify some definition here, because that, for me, and I mean, there may be other sociologists, psychiatrists might differ on this. For me, at that point, you were in no way, you were a transsexual. That had gone. The trans bit was the transformational bit. So you've gone from the male to the female. It was that journey which may have started sometime in the distant past of your youth, childhood. At that point, when you come off that, out of that operation, in every respect, you're a female.
Mm.
Legally. Hormonally, are you producing the female hormone yourself? Are you aware of that naturally? Is that happening?
Well, you see, when I said that people shouldn't take the hormones, because I clarified that by saying I was as female as I was ever going to be before I took the hormones.
Right.
Because you feel. What the hormones did for me was to actually echo what I already knew.
What was happening already in your body, probably.
Yeah. Because what it's actually allowing you to do is, if people, I have been told that scientifically, with the hormones, I'm as female as I'm ever going to get without the other hormone-producing things that they've now chopped off. If before that I actually felt the same as I did then why do they need the hormones in the first place?
Yeah, sure.
So the hormones just confuse the middle bit.
So you've come out of this stage, and how old are you when this final what I'm seeing is the final element and part of this journey? How old was that?
2002.
All right, so we're talking 9 years ago.
Nine. But coming here as a male technically, and going into that operation, you then come out of that feeling full circle, and you feel, okay, I've now done everything, I'm now back to square one, I can now start again.
That was in 2002.
Yep. So you actually feel that you've completed this, okay, I have now remodeled.
So you went
on the outside, what was on the
inside.
You
acted very quickly then, once the NHS
totally
told you that you couldn't, you'd have to wait another 5 years. You must have been out to Thailand bloody quick.
Because I wasted my time for the last 5 years.
So you did some speedy research, got yourself out here. Went to John Bowie, had the yeah, cut.
The biggest problem was the blood.
Okay.
Up until that point, this is an aside. Up until the NHS were putting me through the hoops, I would faint at the thought of blood. I would pass out at the thought of an injection. And I was researching and finding that I was passing out looking at the computer screen and then thinking, oh my goodness me, this cannot happen. Now, because I pushed myself to understand what the hell could happen here and I would be expected to go through I'll go on to that in a minute, I knew that I'd have to overcome this. And so therefore, when I came here for the first time in 2002 and went into surgery, I had prepared myself for what was just about to hit me. And that was, everybody in the world for the next month was going to be looking up between my legs. I was going to be seeing blood, weird and wonderful sights of my body that would absolutely, you know, 6 months before I would have just fallen on the floor, but I had now overcome. And I'd now actually realised that period of learning about the blood and not passing out, I was actually accepting how I, you know, this has got to happen and it's going to happen. Mm. Because otherwise, if it doesn't, I don't feel complete.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I push myself for it.
So you're now complete?
Oh, totally.
What are you sexually?
I'm still the same as I was when I was 26.
And I get in the sense of, there's a sense of bi-ness here. I mean, that's been an expression of...
No, sexually, no. Sexually, no. Mentally, yes.
So what's the difference?
Sexually, because I am not... Well, the more I think about it, after you've asked that question, the worse the hole I dig myself, but especially the technical people listening. But I... And this will now carry on from where I've left off with the physical thing. I lost my penis in 2002. And I stopped having erections at 2001. The hormones knock it off completely.
Okay.
So at 2002, there was definitely no erection.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd already got into a stage of feeling lack of sexual, as I'd known, satisfaction. So from 13, 14 through to that period, I had enjoyed a 7.5-inch cock, which I'd masturbate for 2-3 times a day when I was younger. Thank you. When I was younger, and during the early times, I was frequently masturbating. However, when I came up to this period of realizing now on the inside what was in the inside, that went down. I had no need. Hormones kicked in. You just don't get it. Chop off the willy. There's no satisfaction sexually at all.
But you. Okay, but you've now got a vagina.
Yep.
Have you got a clitoris?
Yep.
Which
is the head of my penis.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's fascinating.
So I can tickle in there and find...
How big is the clit? Because the clits can be quite tall, can't they? Some clits are smaller than others.
Yeah, I mean, how can I put it?
Fingernail? What? Little finger?
Yeah. Well, if you look at your little finger and look at the nail area of your little finger. If you look at the little finger and look at the nail, okay, yeah. that is about the area of the hood of where the clitoris comes from. But the clitoris itself is not a penile type phallic thing.
No.
It is a bud.
Blood,
it is the very sensitive flesh that was on the top of.
So
the
can
head
you get
penis.
Orgasm through stimulation of that?
No, have not had an orgasm for how many years? 2002.
9 years.
Yeah.
Actually, in the back of my head, I'm just marvelling at the skill the surgeons must have to do this.
Yep. So why? But you're in a, now you're in a relationship with Tuck, who's a 30-something Thai woman.
She was flattered when you said that on the vignette. No, she's actually 7 years my junior.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. She looks good.
She looks well. So Tuck, Thai lady. Her sexuality, she's straight, bi, lesbian.
She's straight.
So we've got two straight women having a sexual relationship. This is not Tom and D-land.
Isn't it?
I don't know, I'm asking.
Of course it is.
What do you think?
But you see, it's a pigeonhole. It's that box on the wall over there with you know, the nine squares in it. It's the how do you actually categorise this? Mm. And that's difficult.
Well, he doesn't need categorising, really. I'm playing with it a little bit.
Unless you're an academic researcher.
Well, I'm playing the role of the psychiatrist here because as a sociologist, you're looking to the typologies operate in very simplistically. You can be whatever you want, and that's the beauty of having the courage and the artistry to break the mould. Well, actually, you've got to have the courage to break the mould, and then the artistry comes, what do you do then, having broken it? Because you don't just want to stay in pieces.
Yep.
You want to emerge into something new and fresh, which is what you've done. Sexually, though, we know how here in Thailand, the Tom and D syndrome, where there's the Tom, the sort of stronger masculine female, with the D, the more feminine female, having relationships. You see a lot of that here, and it's very common, very yep. open, and very accepted.
Yep.
But you're not, that's something you don't feel the need to be part of that. You're two women who are together.
We see
emotionally
being in that relationship. And funnily enough, being here in Thailand, if I was in the West, I'd probably be thinking about this completely differently.
Mm.
But being in that relationship in Thailand, I, for one, and I know Tuck doesn't, you don't actually look at yourself as any particular relationship.
Mm.
You don't actually say, oh, we are.
Yeah, sure.
But I know through reading, through looking, from discussions, that there are relationships of these types. Now, I have very many friends, Thai, who are more masculine than I am. And they are born original women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're... You know, they've got the fob watch and the cuffs and the short, you know, shorter hair, trying to look the male because they are that image. And it is a satisfaction for them to just follow that role.
Well, I'm just going to, there's a quick plug for my book here, because one of the points I make in the book, one of the little quotes that I use, it's my own quote, is that we should not impose on babies a sex identity. We should allow children to find out for themselves what they are and what they want to be. And this is coming out from this podcast. This is writ large with Ali being constrained by expectations, family pressure, culture, society. Fortunately, working for an organization like BAA, who are surprisingly enlightened and wonderful and supportive and important part in Ali's life, they were there. But You are in a place here in Thailand where you can be who you are without the imposition of the gender binary.
Totally.
And that's a wonderful freedom.
Totally.
That you've got. Because if you went back to the UK and you tried living out in Manchester or Cardiff,
totally.
What problems?
Now, when I came to Thailand for my operation in 2002,
yeah.
I didn't know that existed.
Yes.
I didn't know there was this out here.
Yeah.
I'd not been to Thailand before.
Yeah.
And when I came here, it was obvious. Even in the hospital, even in the treatment after, even, you know, you stay here for a month because you have to go through various checkups, even in the visits that you made to various places, you thought, hang on a minute, all of this is just so foreign. If I was back in the UK, I wouldn't see these people as openly just being them, individual.
There's no judgment here.
Nah.
And people who have not been to Thailand, it is... Is it elsewhere in Southeast Asia? Do you think it would do the same? I don't know, Cambodia, Singapore, China, maybe. Maybe it's certainly here in Thailand anyway.
I think it is here in Thailand, and I have I have a wacko idea about why, but
you know what I'm going to do now, don't you?
Yeah.
I actually think this will be a good place to start, because I can see this actually. You've got three stories to tell here. We've had the first podcast was very much a foundation and laying out the questions you had.
Yeah, you're right.
Then the second one, this today, we've gone through. I've made the decision and gone through with it. And I think there must be the third story here. And can I ask, would you be willing to do a third story?
You're quite welcome to. I've got it in me. And yes, by all means, I'd love to.
Otherwise, we're going to sit here for another 2 hours, ladies and gentlemen, with Stephen throwing questions around. So that would be a good place to start. I think the Relationship Manifesto podcast series has taken on a new lease of life here. It's been very interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
And so remember, the blog is at relationshipmanifestopostures.com. If you want to find other episodes, or you want to leave comments yourself. And actually, I'm looking forward to next week again. No, this is working out brilliantly. Full emotion. Yeah, it is. It's new ground for me. Right, I'm a typical sort of Brit that's got all these old. You know, I'm going to stop. Right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, hope you've enjoyed it. See you, Ali. Thanks again, Stephen. Thanks again, and boys and girls, we'll see you again next week. Have fun.
Thank you.
This recording is part of a Relationship Manifesto podcast series with Chris Smith and Stephen Whitehead.